This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Producer Selena Reeder recently sat down with local musicians and promoters to discuss the history of Cincinnati's underground music venues in this recorded interview.
The air in the basement of the house on Rose Street that winter was hot and dusty. That's because the lead singer of the band performing that night was swinging from the ceiling duct when it gave way to his weight and broke, pumping heat into the crowd. It was a basement show booked by some college kids who were clearly going to lose their security deposit on the house they were renting. Call these shows underground, unconventional, maybe illegal, and surely a nuisance to neighbors. Young people drift in and out of these spaces, and memories of these shows drift in and out of our thoughts. But they are never truly forgotten.
Here to discuss the history of Cincinnati's DIY venues are Holly Kadish, who ran the Electric Company on Vine. She's also lead singer of The High and Low. Holly, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
I'm also joined by Robert Inhuman. He's the founder of Realicide, the record label. Robert, good to see you again.
Good to be here.
And Faith Maynard ran the Warner House, beginning in maybe 1998, maybe back to 1996. She's also director of Queen City Inquiry. Faith, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start off this conversation with a quote from my colleague Nick Swartzel. He has described venues like this as having a scrappy, exploratory spirit of do-it-yourself culture. But I want to ask all of you how each of you would describe it. I'll start with you, Robert.
I mean, as usual, I'm inclined to agree with Nick. But, I mean, I'd just say it's something coming from DIY ethos, usually born out of necessity. Fight now! Yeah! The necessity being something that's alternative to, like, business-driven bar venues, things with age restriction, especially for, you know, younger people. Making something that you needed that wasn't there before with your friends, and it's something you build up from, usually something from nothing.
Faith, how would you describe it?
Similar to Robert, it's definitely stepping outside the bounds of capitalism to work hard with people you care about towards a goal that might not benefit anyone. And I find so much joy in that.
Holly, with the Electric Company, how would you describe the Electric Company? How would you describe these venues?
Our venue definitely was just embracing what we could do at that time. We've had an opportunity and we took it, and just being creative and doing it all on our own. And also, yeah, a lot of us were musicians, and we did want to take advantage of being able to book ourselves as well.
So Robert mentioned necessity, and I do want to ask to what extent these venues were formed out of necessity. Faith, I think you've said of the Warner House that it sprung out of an inability to book shows for bands you guys were playing in. Did the Warner House become that venue?
Well, it's true. At the time, there was many of us living together in the same large house, and a lot of us were musicians, and we were practicing every night, feverishly, obsessively practicing music in the basement, and going to all the open mic nights, doing all the regular channels, and just nothing was coming of it. And so we had a few parties where we played some music, and then we started connecting with people at our jobs, people we knew in the community, and we realized that there was this history of folks doing punk basement shows in Cincinnati. We were able to meet some of those folks. We got invited to play on some of those shows, and we're like, yeah, let's try this. Let's do this. And it went off from there. We had a lot of fun.
Robert, I think one of the things that you've talked with me about is inclusivity of these spaces. So I want to know more about why that part of the experience is important to you and how these spaces were open for all.
It's everything. I mentioned age restriction earlier. If there's not something for the next generation to be ushered in and have what I'd hope is going to be a safe space to learn how to take the reins for subculture, then what do people expect is going to come next? But yeah, I mean, it's inclusivity. Not to completely throw shade on bar culture, but, you know, spaces where predatory behavior is often overlooked as long as it's a paying customer, or life-crippling vices are fed into as long as it's good for business. Inclusivity means everybody can come there and not worry about predatory behavior, exploitation, domination. It's a self-governing scenario. And I'd like to think of it as like a bit of a microcosm for what a lot of us, especially down like the anarchist path, are going to be looking at as far as like models for, you know, what we'd like to see as a healthier society. And I mean, that could be strange based on how obnoxious and noisy things can get, especially when you're talking about the music aspect of it. But all of that aside, the reason it matters and the reason why it's an international network of DIY, the implications, even after we outgrow this and we're not doing shows at our houses anymore, that inclusivity becomes how we live. And it ends up being like guiding doctrine of every facet of our lives. At least many people that I've known coming from formative years until now, well into adulthood, it's everything.
Well, you mentioned predatory behavior at bars. So I want to turn to the question of young people being in these spaces, in unofficial venues and in houses. I think I was 17 at the Warner House. Maybe I'll ask Faith and Holly as women about making it a safe space.
One of the jokes about me is that if you were at one of my basement shows, our basement shows, and I felt like you were being problematic, I would first ask your friends to take you home, but I would probably get your mom's phone number. So yeah, you just have to dig in, figure out who the people are. Like if somebody is being problematic, I wouldn't walk away from them. I would lean in to the problematic person and find out what was going on.
Holly, I have really fond memories of the Electric Company on Vine Street. So I guess I want to know about how it started. Why did you and your friends decide to turn the ground floor into a performance space?
It was a blank space that we were fortunate to have. It wasn't really a basement. It was, you know, a whole floor, first floor of a building. So it looked more like a space, like where you could have shows, than an apartment living space. And I wasn't living there at the time, but Trevor, who was one of the co-founders, he lived on that first floor. And then we had a few friends on the second floor, and we were all artists. And so we just wanted to take this blank space and turn it into whatever we wanted. And that's what we tried to do. It was really fun, just all of us, just the amount of energy, and we all came together to make it our own.
I guess that the biggest act I saw there was the White Stripes, and it was in 2000. And I don't remember there being a stage, so they're just there on the floor and, you know, you're just like 5 feet away from Jack White. Was that a big get? What were the big gets?
Some of our friends were already playing in bands around Cincinnati. We were able to bring in a crowd because we were kind of like another venue. Somehow a booking agent found out about our space. His name was David. He brought in the White Stripes. It was crazy. That was a great experience.
Faith, with the Warner House, was the first show there, was it the Chemo Kids? There was Max Bender, there was Andrew Jody, etc. I don't know if they were the first show you had.
They were. Chemo Kids were the first show we had. Well, no, as I said earlier, there were some other shows. There was a lot of bands playing at my house. They're regular practice nights, and there were parties that involved bands. And I think the first show we had was my 21st birthday. And the band that played that night was Gunther and the Maladroits, which is a whole interesting other family of bands got spawned from them. But yeah, our first punk show featured the Chemo Kids. And this was a long time friendship, and they did so much with us. And it was a wonderful time.
But this wasn't just punk shows. I think you had a lot of different kinds of music. And I think there was some folk singing. I think Jake Speed performed there.
Well, Jake Speed was in one of the, he was one of the guys that was in one of the bands that practiced there before we ever had shows. He was in a punk band called the Low Tops. And he played with us. Heck, lots of people go over to the folk bluegrass side because A Captain Destiny and the Motor Medics featured Bill Williams and Mike Oberst. That was later on with the Resurgence. Now he's known for the Tillers. So that's a rich connection here in Cincinnati, too, with the, as we age, we tend to go over to folk and bluegrass, which is lovely.
One cup of coffee, then I'll go.
I'd push back on that a little bit.
Leonard Cohen for life.
Yes.
Robert, you've toured all over the world. So what are DIY spaces like outside of Cincinnati? And I think you've said that in Europe, they may be called social centers. Is there something that you could pin down as uniting them?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like the cornerstone that I mentioned earlier, having it be something that's not business driven, that's self-governing, that providing a social service that would have, in most scenarios, been missing otherwise. I will say, touring Europe, I tell people it's like a combination of two very, very strong emotions, like coming from Turtle Island, aka America. First is just complete awe, where you're playing in, I mean, I've played in a squatted luxury car dealership turned into a, you know, a community space. I've stayed in squatted prisons in Spain. I slept in a squatted morgue one time. You know, these are places that are retired from whatever they were, and now they're, but the Europe Squat Network gets epic. So the first feeling is total awe. The second feeling is anger, because I live in Cincinnati and I don't understand, like, why can we not do that here? Why do we not have that in like this country? And I think it's getting there, but I mean, a lot of things have been slow to kind of seep into the quote unquote United States. Like, so we're catching up, but geez, it's really inspiring.
I think I go back to the Warner House, because at times you had shows with 100 people, 200 people. That's a lot for a house. Warner House is off of Ravine. It's in Clifton Heights, or perhaps we'd call it the Fairview neighborhood. It's a residential street. So I don't know how you can manage having 100 or 200 people in a house and how you do it without driving the neighbors crazy.
So this is a very good question. One I've thought a lot of. And this is why we were worried about having some of those bigger shows. Usually we didn't take on the bigger shows unless the venue that they were booked at went under, which happened. So a lot of the punk friendly venues in our there was an era where they were just going down all the time. Top Cats would go down. The Void would go down. The Sudsies went down. So those are the times we caught the big shows, and they were terrifying to have the big shows. And one thing we did is we limited it. We only did 2 shows a month. This is also why you use the basement, because it absorbs the sound to minimize your annoying of the neighbors. Then there was certain, oh gosh, my kids wanted me to say this. There was rules you had to follow. So at 344 Warner, which was our second house, we actually spanned 3 different houses in the same general area. We were right across the street from a church. And the rule is, if you cross the sidewalk with your beer or you pee on the church, you're going to get arrested. So just don't do it.
Like, bring heat on the spot.
Yeah, man, don't do it. And those are really reasonable, fair rules I think anybody can follow. I also think, so this volume, the biggest show we had, of course, 11 plus years of doing it. And River City High was a big band at the time, and they were supposed to be at Sudsies, and Sudsies went over under, and they came, got relocated to our house, and they weren't nice guys either. That was too many people, hard to manage, and a bad thing happened. A person got hurt. It was no good. We don't get to count how many people come to our shows very often. Every once in a while, we do a CD release, and where we would include a copy of the CD with your at the door for everybody that came in. So that's when we got the closest to knowing how many people came through the door. And I think that people came in shifts, because you really can't fit 500 people in my basement. It doesn't happen. People cycle.
Holly, what do you think makes Cincinnati so ripe for DIY venues? I think one of the things that Robert brought up is rent.
I can only talk from the 90s, like the 2000. Now I feel like it would look a lot different. But Cincinnati in 2000, yeah, we could afford to do art and rent out a space. Like, we could afford to do both. And you need that to be able to create your own space and put in the time. You have a lot of time you got to put in, as long as your regular job. And you can only do that if it's affordable.
I don't think Cincinnati is an outlier as far as these spaces. I've been to basement shows in other cities, and you guys, basement shows happened in Cincinnati long before I ever had one, and they're still happening now. In fact, getting ready for the show is like, should we reach out to somebody who's doing shows now?
Doing them right now.
But years and years ago, they ran a story on the Warner House in the News Record, which is the UC newspaper. caused us months of problems.
Oh, because no.
Because people didn't know. And now they were going out of their way to figure out where we were and hassle us. And we had to lay low for a little while. That's what you do. But back to, and also just tagging in on the security question, I think another part of how you stay safe is you have to have a critical mass of people who know why you're here. And they have an understanding of how the space functions and the community functions so that they can be your eyes and ears and they can be the calming voice that will bring any issues to the forefront as quickly as possible and tamp down on any energies that are not conducive to what we're trying to get done.
Holly, I think there's a fleeting sense to these spaces. And when you're in them, I think they feel magical and a sense that they're very much temporal. So when they're gone, do you ache for it? And how special are these shared moments?
Yeah, definitely. It was very collaborative. And there's just something about getting a group of people that are really all working together and it just works so well. That's such a great feeling. And I definitely yearn for that all the time. It definitely had a place and time, and it would look a lot different for me this time in my life. But for a young generation, I think it's really important for sure.
Robert, you have talked a lot about these not being businesses and not having a profit motive. So as a venue that's outside of a normal commercial venue where you're running this space without making money, is that what it is? It wasn't profit driven. What was it? I think we've talked a lot about what it was driven by, but it wasn't profit.
It's meant to be an alternative to that. It's not to say that money doesn't have a place. I mean, there's bills to be paid. I mean, kind of like how Faith describing like a security protocol at Warner House. And anarchy does not mean no rules, no money. It means it's self-governing. You know, you're going to take care of things like with you and your friends. There's no cops involved. The state's not involved. With money, it's like transparency is going to be a factor. It's like, okay, hey, we're going to have a fundraiser because we can't pay rent this month. But it's not so that people can go out and like buy luxurious things for themselves. It's like just keep the lights on, you know? So, you know, it's not business driven. But for example, current day, like Box Elder Community Room in Northside, it's right next door to the Comet, RIP Dave Cunningham. That place lets all kinds of like groups meet around town, art shows. There's music sometimes. Like it's an all-purpose community space, Box Elder Community Room. They've got bills to pay. Sometimes they have to have a fundraiser, you know, like money does exist. Like this is still capitalism. It feels like we kind of can step out of that a bit when we're in these places. But when it comes down to it, it's just like as long as it's not some kind of like generator show, renegade style in a parking lot somewhere, you're going to have to keep the lights on, you know. So it's still not the same as like a typical business, for-profit business, you know. I mean, nonprofit organizations deal with money. It's just not the same.
For years, you've been compiling a database of these venues, of the bands, the shows. Can you tell us a little bit more about this? And as an archivist, I'm going to ask you to look to the present and to the future and tell me what's happening now and what the future looks like.
Cincinnati DIY calendar was a thing that, I mean, I typically ended up being the ringleader by default most of those months, but it was like 2010 through 17. It was at least 50, 60, 70 months of it. Whereas a monthly printed calendar, anything going on around town, typically that was going to be is focused on especially all ages, like non-bar, non-commercial spaces, or just anything at least like with that general like ethos behind it. And every month a different artist would design it, so they all look gnarly, they're crazy. Those are definitely the years of copy scams. I will not divulge how we got free copies live on the air. Copies were free, and that was a beautiful aspect of all of the things we're talking about here. There's houses happening. I'm 43, I just don't know about them no more. Like, I'm under no delusion.
One's inviting you anymore.
No, if they need a PA, they'll invite me. I'll tell you that much. And then I'll find out, oh, there's this weird little spot in Clifton. They just need a PA for their thing. There is a future. There's always going to be a necessity for this. And it's going to like look different and change forms based the social climate, economic climate and whatnot, political climate. But it will never not exist. In one way or another, it has always existed. Just, I think it's kind of like these kids are smart and they know that I'm over 30, so they ain't trust me. So you got to go ask some teenagers what's up. But it helps if you're a teenager yourself. Otherwise, they're probably going to like look at you weird, you know, as they should.
Faith, the Warner House is no more. The electric company's no more, Holly. So what did them in? Was it redevelopment around UC or was it just kids growing up and moving out?
I had babies.
That's a great reason.
Yeah. Also, I had babies. It just got to be too scary. I'm still living in the same house. It could happen again sometime. I don't know.
your kids will start it up.
Yeah. I'm so grateful I have punk rock bands practicing in the basement again.
We ended because we all slowly moved out of the building. No, I do think that we are older now and there probably is something going on. And maybe it's a good thing we don't know, because that means that it's going to keep going on wherever it's happening.
Robin and Human, Realicide Records.
Faith Maynard, I was the organizer of the Warner House for many years, and I'm currently the director of Queen City Inquiry.
And I'm Holly Kadish, and I was an organizer for the Electric Company.
Thank you all for being here. It's been so fun talking with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.